You're listening to Panel Borders, which is the podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is the second of a quartet of shows about four generations of British cartoonists. This week, I'm talking to a creator who's making an impression right now. Mark Ellerby is a young cartoonist who self-publishes his own diary comics, has illustrated books for Image Comics and Oni Press, runs the Lakeside Manga Club, and is featured in a group show currently on at Brent Museum in Willesden Green. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner. FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I suppose we could start with the exhibition. How did you first get involved? Did they approach you, or did you see that they were looking for artists?
Yeah, Hannah, the organiser, she emailed me saying that she'd seen my work in Orbital, which is quite nice, Orbital in London. And she just emailed me asking me if I'd like to take part, and I thought, yeah, it'd be a really good opportunity, sort of get my work on the walls, as it were. And very simple, yeah, we met for coffee at my bookstore where I work, and we just sort of talked about the work in general and took it from there, really. Yeah, really easy, and suddenly it's on the walls.
I mean, it's quite a varied collection of art they've got in this exhibition. They've got sort of manga stuff, they've got stuff that seems more like traditional illustration than comics. Mm. I mean, I can't say I actually recognise anyone else's work other than yours here. So presumably they're actually looking for more of a selection of young artists rather than perhaps people who are working in the small press per se.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're looking for people who are perhaps influenced by sequential art and a sort of graphic art. I do hate that term. It's a bit bewildering. But yeah, I think they just wanted people who were sort of young and sort of influenced, and maybe people who are sort of off the radar, or maybe they asked better people and they turned them down, perhaps. Oh. So who knows? But yeah, no, it's a good sort of collection. But no, I don't recognise anyone else really. But it's a lot of good things to check out, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, you mentioned Orbital. It does seem a shame that there aren't more comic shops in this country that sell small press comics, because surely that's where the next generation is coming from, because otherwise you end up with a polarized market where people who are trying to break in only sell their stuff at conventions, and then when you're famous you get sold in shops. And I think, considering how comics are perhaps losing their audience, it's a graying market. They want to get kids interested in comics, and so maybe they should be take more of a risk with young up-and-coming artists like yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's with the small press at the moment, it does seem to be a bit of hard work, really. I know Gosh have reduced their section down. Orbital take anything, which is good, but a certain part of me thinks that maybe it's saturating the market a little bit. But yeah, it does seem to be a bit tough if you're doing small press to actually sort of get your minis out there, in a sense. There's some really good shops like Page 45 and OK Comics, but for every flip side of a good shop, there's sort of five shops that don't take sort of minis and that sort of thing, and they sort of don't really know what to do with them. But I think the internet is sort of helping that market a lot more, and it's freeing up people who can't get their work into shops to say, hey, I've got this website, I've got this webcomic, and they can sort of like promote themselves that way. So I think there's avenues to explore other than print, but I definitely do think it's a shame that some stores are shrinking down their sections or only taking, the creme de la creme of small press, which is okay for me because I still get accepted, and most of my sort of friends, they get accepted, but, they might be missing out on the next sort of big thing. So we'll see how it goes, but, there's other areas out there.
What was your first exposure to the small press then?
I always heard about it on like message boards, like mini comics. There's an artist called Jim Marford, done Clerks and Girl Scouts, and his forum where I was talking about mini comics. I didn't actually know what they were. I just thought they were very sort of tiny comics that, as you know, as opposed to like self-produced comics. So I didn't know what they were, and I investigated them, and then I had a friend from America send me some over, and I was like, this is really cool. It's got like, you know, cardboard cover, and it's photocopied inside. So then that was like really inspiring to sort of like produce my own work for cheap. I don't know, really appealing sense, because that sort of zine aesthetic I really like, and the sort of the way that you can personalise objects and you can, I don't know, do what you want, essentially. And I found it really inspiring, so I started to make my own minis, and they were horrible to begin with. I think everyone's first sort of foray into mini comics are always sort of horrible and sort of crudely drawn, and they're a bit empty, and my ones are about bands and like zombies and pirates, and that's sort of like that was the sort of thing though. But a few years ago, it was all zombies and it was all pirates and bands, and then suddenly
zombie pirate bands,
and then it got really boring really quickly. But I wanted to still continue to make mini comics, so I just made them about myself rather than about zombie pirate bands, as it were.
those first mini comics you made then, did you sell them at conventions, on tables with friends, or were they only distributed via the internet?
A bit of both. I did sell them, or tried to sell them, on my GeoCities website back in the day.
Wow, that does take
it does, doesn't it? Yeah, geocities.com/Zimosis Comics.
Nice.
Back, yes, nice. But I don't think I sold hardly any from there. I did sell to a few friends, but it wasn't like I tried to get them into shops. I think I was a little bit, not embarrassed by it, but I knew they weren't sort of good enough. So I really wanted to like give the shops something amazing that I thought I was really proud of. And that would be my later stuff, like Venal Muse and the Elibisms, self-published sort of work. So yeah, a bit embarrassed by the early stuff.
You've let it slide out of print, have you?
Well, yeah, but now I'm doing these collections of old material, so, and they're sort of starting to creep back in, so there does seem to be an audience for that, so.
When you see people sell comics at conventions, whether it's sort of big ones like Bristol or little ones like the mini web comics thing, or even the events that Ollie Smith organises, you do see people sitting together in kind of like collectives. You have the Modern Monstrosity Collective with the likes of Oliver Lambden and Jake Harold. You have Ollie and his mates, who, you know, are the core London Underground comics lot. And quite often, you know, when you're at a convention, you're with Jamie McKelvey. How long has that relationship been going? Did you meet at art school, or did you just meet at a convention and you had a similar aesthetic? Or?
No, we both got into Only Press, sort of their comics that they were producing, and Jamie was doing a lot of work helping out an artist called Christine Norrie. She used to do work on Hopeless Savages, and she has a really good graphic novel she did called Cheat that Only brought out, and we were just on the message board, and I think eventually we sort of cottoned on that he was from England and I was from England, and somehow we got together in some really kind of like small press, really rubbish anthology called Ragtag. And yeah, we were both in that, and we just followed each other's respective careers and that sort of thing. And as it turns out, it's just a case of if I've got a table spare, he'll just come along and like share half of it. They're very unorganized, those boys. But yeah, it's cool. It's good to hang out with Jamie. He's not a million miles away, I think, from my audience. So it does have that sort of crossover appeal. But yeah, we just sort of met from the internet and our love of Only Press, and that really.
How did you get the gig at Only then? Because you illustrated Love the Way You Love.
Before that, I did a tempe strip in Bell and Sebastian graphic novel that Image brought out, and that was written by Jamie Rich. And when it came to him looking for an artist for his Love the Way You Love series, he emailed me saying, would you like to draw this? And I got the script through, and it was very shoujo manga, and there was like some concern that maybe I wasn't like the one that he was looking for. But then we started testing out the pages and everything, and how Jamie came to found my work was actually through my live journal. Okay. It's all very much through the internet, and my sort of like career and stuff at the moment. So I just kept updating my live journal with as many comics as I could, and he started to follow me, and then he was impressed enough to sort of offer me a job. So live journal, it's like the worst tool that you can use to blog, but for some reason it's really good for comic artists. So it's a bit embarrassing when I say, how did you get into comics, and I go, live journal. It's a bit...
Well, I mean, conversely, that at the same time might encourage people to do the same who thought, you know, how do I share my art with the public, as
it were? Yeah, it's definitely good to, like, show as much as your work as you can. I think that's always the best thing to do.
So presumably, in a way, then when you're sort of starting out in the industry, it's a bit like going to film school where you see notices in the college, you know, bulletin boards saying, you know, writer looking for director, you know, first AD looking for cameraman or whatever. Definitely. So there's a similar thing going on the internet, artists looking for writers who are trying to, you know, do projects that might give them greater exposure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think the internet is like a bulletin board, as you say, in a certain extent, but there's always someone looking for someone. It's just, you know, sometimes they meet and sometimes they don't, I guess.
Had making comics been a lifetime ambition since you were at school? Or
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I've always sort of enjoyed comics. I fell out with them during high school, 14, 15, but then when I went to college, I sort of got back into them again. So, but yeah, I've always wanted to work in comics and wanted to work for Oni Press. That was always sort of like my art school dream, to like get a comic published by Oni. So when I did, it was all very much a... sort of like a yes.
Well, I remember they really kind of launched with a bang, only they've sort of like lapsed in recent years. Yeah. But to start off with, they did some very strong titles.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they had like the Clerks comics, and you know, Frank Miller done a comic with them, and Simon Bisley, and Judd Winnick started his career, Greg Rooker, Scott Morse, Jim Marford, China Gluston. They all sort of like, Andy Watson had comics published through them, and it was like they're like an army for a while. It was they were almost unstoppable, and I think. Now they've started to like restructure throughout the years, and I think now they've started to come back a little bit. They've got like Scott Pilgrim, and they've got Shark Knife. Brandon Graham's doing some work for them, and it's a different beast now. They've sort of got more sort of like a Hollywood mind set, because Scott Pilgrim's been turned into a movie, and so is
Whiteout.
Yep. Yeah, I think they're just sort of looking for like the bigger picture now, whereas before it was just a case of get the comics out and. We don't care really, but now it's more a case of let's see if we can sell this to Hollywood, let's see if we can get this on MySpace, let's see if we can, you know, get this there and different avenues. It's not just about the comics, it's about what they can do with the comics, which is understandable, it's how they make their money. So
it was the kind of underground American artists that Oni were publishing, combined with perhaps shoujo manga, that you'd say were your main influences? Said the man who runs the Lakeside Manga Club.
I do. Most of it's very saturated, and that's what I don't like about manga, is the fact that it's become a product, and you can essentially say that anything with stereotypical big eyes and, you know, lack of background is manga. A lot of people call my work manga, and I'm like, it's not manga. It's just, you know, it's just comics. It's just illustration. Manga means comics at the end of the day, so there shouldn't be that sort of, like, snobbery from both sides, but... No.
At the same time, manga is used as shorthand for a genre rather than just another name for the medium.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think that most people know what manga is, but, you know, when you say graphic novel to some people, they go, oh, I've heard of this somewhere. Is it a bit like manga? I remember when The Observer had their first competition. It was in the Observer, and the headline was "Manga Grows Up," and I was like, "Really, guys?"
Well, at least it wasn't sort of Biff Pow.
Biff Pow, yeah. It was a bit bewildering because manga's always been grown up. One of the audience, you know, the only audience in the world that is accepted by adults and children alike is manga. But hey, c'est la vie. Anyway, yes, influences. I think definitely more sort of underground cartoonists, Jim Marford, especially Matt Groening. Especially his sort of pre-work on The Simpsons, that sort of like
life in hell.
Life in hell, yeah. The bunnies and the guys with the fez and that sort of thing. You look at these like massive like strip books that he's done, and they're amazing. They're so crudely drawn, but they're so lovely. And Brian O'Malley, he done Scott Pilgrim eventually. He was a big influence. China Gluston, Blue Monday. I just love that sort of like that black and white aesthetic, really, and the sort of like really sort of thick line work. And yeah, they just done work that they wanted to do, really, and I felt that was always really inspiring, to do work that you love more than anything else, and you have to get it out there. And I felt like those guys and their sort of black and white products that looked really cool, and that the stark imagery was just the way that I wanted to go with my work as well. So yeah, they were very influential.
I mean, I suppose in a way, with American indie comics, it's a bit like even superhero comics were a few years ago, that you find loads of British creators making their mark in America before coming back home and maybe trying to get their graphic novels published. Because it's interesting that you and Jamie met while trying to work for an American publisher.
Well, for a while there wasn't really much of a British scene, and it was kind of a depressing time that all we really had was, you know, I guess Titan, but they weren't even doing their own work. They were just sort of just licensing. Yeah, and you know, we got Jonathan Cape, and they've been around for about 8 years now, I think, maybe a bit longer. Yeah, but they was importing stuff. And you know, that's fine. I mean, a lot of record companies do that as well. They'll import like bands to build up their sort of bank balance, really, and then they can start, you know, financing other acts. In terms of like my work, I knew that I would have to get work from America because there was no demand for it over here. And now suddenly there seems to be all these book companies bringing out all these different graphic novel ranges. And our Walker Books are about to launch, and that's really exciting. Jonathan Cape, and you know.
Well, it seems a very recent phenomenon. It's just been literally the last 12 months.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you go into any bookstore, like about 2 years ago, and the graphic novel section was very sort of small and very tiny, and now it's...
And entirely American.
Yeah, entirely American. And now you get people, you know, Hannah Berry's works in there, and Simone Lyer, and Andy Watson. For years, what really frustrated me was like how Andy Watson was British, but you could never get any of his books in a bookstore because they were always really hard to get because they were always through Oni or slave labour. So what's really exciting with like the Walker books deal is that there'll be his own books coming out for a British publisher at last, which is really nice. So there's no sort of equivalent to Oni, and there's no equivalent to slave labour in a sense. So if there is, hopefully one day, that'd be awesome. Fingers crossed. I'm a bit sort of like, I don't think it'll happen, but I'd love it to. It'd be amazing.
In the meantime, the new champion of the small press in America is Image Comics, bizarrely, because they started off doing awful superhero comics, you know, 15-20 years ago. And the most recent strip you've had published over there is a backup strip in Phonogram. The lead strip of which is written by a Brit and drawn by a Brit, and now the backup strip is...
The editor's British as well. Eric Stevenson, yes, he's British.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a British invasion. It's great, yeah. I mean, Image took everyone by surprise, really. It's great for me, because now I think... Before, I would have thought, I can't pitch to Image, you know, who am I? But now it's like, well, maybe I'd have a shot, because, you know, I know the editors, and... You know, I've had work in their anthologies. I've got some more work coming in their anthologies. So it's bewildering. I don't know what's happened, but it's really good that a company that's so big, you know, it's sort of one of the big four, isn't it, has the ability to promote a book like Phonogram, which is essentially quite a hard sell.
Yeah.
And I think if it was on like a company like Oni or Slave Labor, it might have slipped under the radar a little bit. So, no, it's great. It's amazing. And the opportunity to work in Phonogram, I was very chuffed with, because, you know, me and Kieran and Jamie always, you know, take the mick out of each other at conventions and stuff. And
you heard my interview with them, they take the mick out of you.
But, you know, I was really flattered that they asked me, and, you know, it was a really good script and a really good idea. But Kieran and Jamie, it's very frustrating for them, because recently they've had to sort of delay Phonogram issue 2 because it's not making enough money. So they have to sort of substitute that with sort of working on Cable and Sabretooth, which is such a depressing sort of like industry sometimes, that the fact that you have to draw these sort of stupid people running around after each other when you want to do something from the heart. But that's the way it goes, really. I mean, like commercial illustrators, you know, they'll draw, you know, Noddy and that sort of thing to sort of like, you know, pay the bills as well. So it's not something that I've had to sort of do yet. But, you know, if Marvel asked me to do the Hulk, you know, they're never going to ask me to draw the Hulk, but I'd have a think about it at
never
least.
Know.
They never know. James Kolchak had done the Hulk. Yeah. It was one about the rain, I think. They can do what they want, essentially. I think there's enough outlets for the small press to sort of, like, get their work out there. It's whether or not it makes money, I guess, is the other thing.
I mean, talking of stories from the heart, I mean, how did it feel when you went from zombie pirate band comics to autobiographical stuff? Because obviously there's the whole nature of not only are you growing up as an artist in the public eye, but you're sharing personal stories, bearing in mind that your girlfriend's in earshot right now.
She is in earshot, definitely. Yeah, it was liberating. It was really sort of like, I don't know why it took me so long to sort of like find this avenue, because I was... I was so busy looking at Jim Marford's sort of like action comedy, underground comics and almost humour books. And then suddenly I found Jeffrey Brown and Craig Thompson and Alex Robinson and like the top shelf scene. And I sort of was like, oh, this is great, this stuff. What is this? And but I was like really inspired to sort of like go, oh, I'm going to give this a try. And yeah, it was like, so liberating to sort of like tell different stories from a different sort of perspective and comics that people can relate to more, because I don't think people can really relate to zombie pirate rock bands to a certain extent, and they'll find it amusing, but I really like it when I get like emails from people and they go, oh yeah, my girlfriend does this, or I've done this in the past, or the one where you've done a girl playing the video games and she's throwing the controller around with the lead to the attached. It's, yeah, that's my girlfriend, she does that. That's great, you know. And I think you sort of have to detach yourself to a certain extent. Like, I know the Mark in comics, I see that as a character, and I see the Anna, who's my girlfriend, she's a character in the comics. But, you know, I hold some stuff back because I think that's my human right to sort of, like, not publish all our dark. And
although we live in a culture where it seems to be all about, you know, exposing yourself on definitely. TV or YouTube, you know.
Definitely, and I think Big Brother, you know, I think it's so sort of cringy and it's horrible, and I think they're sort of doing it to gain success, whereas I'm trying to, you know, tell a story in a certain way. But I have to separate myself from the comic itself, or I think I'll get a bit worked up over it, or I'll sort of stress that I'm not being totally honest and that sort of thing. I don't fictionalise the comics. It's all real what happens, but maybe it's a snapshot of something larger. Maybe it's just a very tiny moment of the day.
It's funny though, because in a way the autobiographical comic in the small press is almost a cliche because so many people do them. But and yet, if you were to talk about autobiography in regular print books, it's a massive medium. And I suppose it's because it's that whole idea of connecting with the audience, and because the small press is very much an intimate relationship with the audience, they come up to your stall, they meet you in person. You know, you might annotate the copy they're buying. There is this relationship that isn't there in other parts of the medium.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's almost a joke in a way. I think autobiographical comics in small press, it's like, oh, another comic about you, or, you know, it's almost become a joke. And like you say, in bookstores, it's, you know, Biography Bay is like huge, and, you know, there's painful lives within the biography section.
Your day job, the bookshop where you work, has a manga club.
It does have a manga club.
And I mean, you know, you said you're not a big fan of manga, but maybe that's in the sense that you're not a big fan of these manga series that go on for interminable volumes and seem to be marketed entirely at a teenage audience that has no taste. But in terms of... I said that, not you. It's all right. I'm letting
very,
you off the hook. Exactly. In terms of you, though, kind of promoting manga to young people, there's not an awful lot of that goes on in terms of reading groups. I mean, I don't know if the chain that you work for that shall remain nameless does this in other branches, but certainly yours is the only one I've heard of. I mean, what is it like, that kind of relationship with young readers that you have?
It's good. It's frustrating because they have a very set mindset, and I think that's just manga fans in general. They're almost hard work in a sense. You can show them, you know, Bleach, and they'll be like, oh yeah, brilliant, yeah, I've got all the DVDs, I've got the anime, I've got the eye patch, I've got the key ring and everything, and you're like, what do you think of the story? Yes, all right, yeah, it's got ninjas in it. You know, what manga doesn't have a ninja in it? And then, you know, I remember once I showed them Tick and Concrete, Black and White by Taiyo Matsumoto, and it was like, I punched him in the face. It was, they found it so offensive. They didn't know what to do with it. I was like, this is really beautiful. Look at this artwork. Look at the way that he sort of frames his panels. Look at the way he sort of draws in an almost jagged style. This is European comics filtered through, like, you know, shonen manga. It's, you know, it's action. And it's got a lot of heart. And it's got these sort of lovely dream sequences. And they just didn't know what to do with it. That's the majority of them. Some of them do sort of, they're more open to the sort of idea that there is more out there than Bleach and Fullmetal Alchemist and whatever else there is. It's endless, isn't it? What I find most inspiring about manga is the fact that these kids get so into it. And from a bookstore perspective, it's really exciting that you can sort of go, you know, here's a series and there's 10 volumes of it. As a creator, that's really inspiring as well. I'm sort of coming up with an idea at the moment to pitch to various publishers. That's a series about this girl who sort of hunts monsters. Mm. But it's more time sort of spent on the bus to sort of hunt these monsters. And it's sort of like a tongue-in-cheek sort of horror. Almost like manga-inspired book, and that's going to be hopefully about 4 to 5 volumes. So as a creator, it's very inspiring. And, you know, I think they're more open to this wackiness, the sort of manga fans. And I think, you know, eventually they'll start to grow out of manga, and eventually they'll go,
one hopes.
And I think, you know, I mean, I used to read X-Men, I used to read Spider-Man, and then I was like...
I like the medium, but there must be more out there.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I've seen Cyclops run around and cry a lot, and I want something else. So I sort of found Preacher and, like, Transmetropolitan, and I thought, these are awesome. Like, where have I been? Mm. And then, you know, eventually I got sort of tired of the Vertigo imprint, and I was like, well, what more is out there? And then Oni Press, and then Jeffrey Brown, and then Small Press. And it's, if I've done that, I can't see why these sort of kids can't do it.
And how did the manga club come about? I mean, is it just that you were working in this branch and they knew you were a comic book creator and so might be the one to sell it to the kids? Or had the company been thinking of doing a manga club and for some reason chose your location to try it out?
Not really. Well, it was all sort of down to me, really. I sort of felt like when I was a kid, there was nothing there for me to go to a club and sort of, you know, bring my artwork and go, I drew this picture, or talk about comics. And I was talking to my mum, and she was like, oh, if you were, like, you know, 12, you'd love going to this. Or not 12, but 16 or whatever. Because she was saying, like, how I wanted to join a drawing club, and she was desperate to try and find this drawing club for, like, young people, and there was just nothing out there in the Essex area. So that sort of inspired me to go, well, maybe I could do, like, a manga club.
Because it's what kids are into.
It's what kids are into, and I have a vague interest in it, and so I can talk to them about it, and I sort of just felt like, you know, it's better than stocking shelves, really. You know, it's something that I can get really into, and it's something that I can put my personal input into as well. So, yeah, I just wanted to, like, make a little bit of a difference in the area. Something that was, like, something where kids who are quite different, and they're quite socially inadequate in a certain sense. They, you know, they're sort of, like, from that sort of emo scene, whatever that is. And, you know, for once a month, they can sort of go to a bookstore and just sit and talk about whatever book we chose to talk about that month. And it's great that they get so much out of it. It's a bit of hard work, but, you know, they get a lot out of it. So, no, it's good fun. It's good fun. And hopefully more stores and more sort of, like, clubs are starting to, like, pop up, and more people sort of pick up on the idea that, hey, it's, you know, we can sort of turn manga and sequential art into something that's more in our society, and, you know, word of mouth will get round that there's a club and there's an outlet for these sort of kids to sort of, like, go and to have art lessons and art tutorials and that sort of thing. So it's good. I mean, I brought Emma Pascelli down for a night to sort of, like, talk to them about her sort of career and everything, and she comes from Wickford in Essex, which isn't too far from where I live. And some people think just because they come from Essex, they can't do anything. So why I brought Emma down was, A, she's my friend. B, she's a really good manga artist that I think the kids would sort of, like, relate to. But I've wanted to show that, you know, you can sort of come from sort of an area that's a bit stereotypical, is a bit dumb, and is a bit sort of no hope. And you can make a really successful career from being an artist, really. And yeah, it was a great night, and we had about 50 to 60 people turn up, and it was amazing. It was really good, so hopefully I can do a bit more of that.
Well, I mean, I suppose you're doing that in a way anyway, being in this group exhibition in Brent Museum, that hopefully enough people who come to the library will stick their heads in and see that there are artists from the UK who are doing comic book art, and you can see the original artwork here.
Yeah, definitely. And I've always wanted to inspire people, and I do some teaching at University College of Creative Arts in Maidstone.
Fingers in many pies.
Yes, they're all over the place, aren't they? And it's like, I do it once a year in January and February, and I essentially run the comic class, as it were, for first year illustration. It's sort of an elective, so people from various different areas, say photography, film, animation, they can come into a sort of area and they can knuckle down and do comics if they want, or if they're sort of thrown into it because they didn't get their first pick, which often happens. But it's really good when you see the students and they've sort of put like my work in there, even though I'm their tutor to a certain extent. I opened up this girl's like learning journal. It was like, I really like Mark Ellerby's work, even though he's my tutor. And I was like, wow, she's put my work and she's taken the time to print it out, cut it out, you know, stick it down in her book. And I was like, that's amazing. And hopefully she'll sort of continue to make comics. And I think an exhibition like this, if people can come in and go, wow, how old is this guy? And they go, find out that I'm like 25. I'm like, wow, he's not that old than me. You know, you can still, you know, you can still do it. And I think with my self-published work, my mini comics and the Ellerbisms and the Venal Muse and all that sort of stuff, I think the main thing that why I do it is to influence people and inspire people, and hopefully people will, you know, find inspiration for my work and continue to draw comics. It's just about, you know, I think, you know, that sort of hope that people have. Hopefully they can sort of wake up one day and go, yes, I will do it, you know. There's no reason why I can't. So, yeah.
If you'd like to hear my chat with Mark again, it's repeated on Sunday at 11:30 p.m. and will be available online shortly as a podcast that you can stream or download on my blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com, which also contains links about young Ellerby's comics. On next week's show, I'm talking to Peter Doherty, a Judge Dredd artist from the early 90s to the present day, who's also worked on Batman and Superman and the gritty war comic Grendel Tales. That's at the same time, 5 p.m, next Thursday on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for listening.